Well, the church in Philippi was a church that was known for its generosity. Whenever Paul mentions the Macedonian churches, the churches in Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea, in his letters to others, it's to do so, he does so in order to speak of their generosity. The Philippian church in particular had a history of giving to support Paul's ministry. Philippi had been his first stop when he crossed over into Europe. The Christians there had played an instrumental role in supporting him as he moved on through Thessalonica and Berea and on to Corinth. In fact, we learn the most about the Philippians' generosity from what Paul writes in 2 Corinthians, where Paul is urging the Corinthian Christians to give as freely and as sacrificially as the Macedonian churches have done to help the poor in Judea. Paul writes that in the midst of a very severe trial and extreme poverty, they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. By the time of Paul's imprisonment and the time he writes this letter to the Philippians, that church's joyful and sacrificial generosity was well established. More recently, the Philippians had sent a gift to Paul, whether in the form of financial support or something more like a care package, as they had heard that he was in jail and in need. They'd chosen one of their members named Epaphroditus and entrusted him with the gift and sent him off on the long journey to make sure that Paul was provided for. And now at the close of this letter, in what may be Paul's whole purpose for writing in the first place, Paul writes to thank his friends in Philippi for their generosity and concern for him, for their partnership in the gospel, as he wrote in chapter 1. The Philippian church stood in a unique relationship with Paul when it came to giving and receiving, to use Paul's phrase from verse 15. Now Paul wants them to understand a few things from God's perspective about contentment and about giving and about receiving. This letter has proved so timely over the past 6 weeks. And this closing passage here about generosity is no different. Here we get a glimpse into how Paul and the Philippians supported each other through a challenging season, through giving and receiving. And it's those same practices of generosity that are going to help see us through today. First of all, Paul begins here, importantly, not with his own need as he sat in prison, unable to work. But he begins by talking about a sense of contentment. Starting in verse 11, he writes, "I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength." In some of his other letters, Paul makes it pretty clear that he preferred to support himself through his trade as a tent maker rather than receive financial support from the churches that he planted, though he argued he would be well within his rights to do so. In the ancient Roman world, receiving a gift could involve all sorts of social obligations and entanglements of patronage and reciprocity that could be a hindrance to his mission and Paul would prefer to avoid. He was known to accept missionary support, and he certainly took advantage of offers of hospitality in the many cities that he visited. He could even twist a few arms when it came time to meet others' needs. He lays it on pretty thick in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 when it came to the collection for the churches in Judea. But when it came to his personal needs, Paul generally took a different view. The Philippian church was pretty unique in providing personal support to Paul on multiple occasions. Here, Paul would prefer to be content with what he has. To be content is to know the meaning of the word enough, to know and to have what is sufficient for life. As Paul writes in 1 Timothy 6, if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. Paul is saying here that the joy that he has so often expressed throughout this letter is not something that is dependent on his material circumstances. This word for contentment has a background in Stoic philosophy, where it implies self-sufficiency and independence. But Paul uses it here precisely to express his dependence on God. I can do all this through Him who gives me strength, he says. Gerald Hawthorne and Ralph Martin note the paradox. The secret of Paul's independence is his dependence on Christ. I don't know about you, but I've so often heard this verse, which is more commonly translated, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I so often hear this verse and think of all the bold and daring things that we might be empowered to do through Christ. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But reading it in context here, what if the most bold and daring thing we could do is what Paul is talking about right here? To be content with the very limited circumstances that he finds himself in as he waits on the Lord. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Even be content. Paul says this is not just a theoretical discussion, nor is it something that he's come by naturally, but this is a perspective he's had to learn. He says he's learned the secret to being content. He's been initiated into it by his experiences of need and plenty, by his experience of being hungry and satisfied. We might even add freedom and imprisonment. I wonder how many of us have approached this present season over these last couple of months as a school for contentment. I'll admit that I have not. But it might not be too late to start. And it goes deeper. Bonnie Thurston notes that our literal translation of verse 11 reads, I have learned in what I am to be content. Thurston explains, it's not only that Paul has learned by experience to be content in whatever circumstances he finds himself, which he has done, he has also come to be content in who he is. He's made peace with himself in the midst of these circumstances. The gift of Paul's confinement has been his contentment and a heart at peace. Now, Paul is content, but he doesn't want the Philippians to get the wrong idea, as if he didn't need or appreciate the gift that they went to such lengths to deliver. He tells them, it was good of you to give. Accounting language prevails in this short section. Words like receipt and credit and payment. But far from reducing the Philippians' gift to some sort of business transaction, Paul invests it with spiritual significance. This is what Paul rejoices in verse 10. There's that word again. Not just the gift itself, but what it pointed to in his friends in Philippi. The care and concern that they'd expressed for him. The virtue and the gift of generosity working itself out and bearing fruit in their lives. Sacrificial giving that mirrored the gift of Christ. In 2 Corinthians 8, Paul refers to generosity in the same way and with the same words that he uses to talk about the other gifts that the Corinthians were so confident they excelled in. Prophecy and speaking in tongues and the like. Paul strongly implies that generosity is a work of the Spirit in the lives of believers. And that matters financial and material, far from lesser concerns or even necessary evils, are imbued with spiritual significance. Paul tells them, it was good of you to share in my troubles. This word for sharing used twice in these verses. It's the same word that Paul used for the Philippians' partnership with him in the gospel at the outset of the letter. The word is koinonia, that important word for Christian fellowship. Philippians' gift, you see, wasn't just a way for them to stand by Paul in his imprisonment, but it was a way for them to bear some of his burden themselves, to share in his sufferings, Paul says, the same way that Paul so desired to share in the sufferings of Christ in the previous chapter. I think you'll agree that this sort of fellowship goes far beyond what we're all missing about coffee hour these days. Paul recognizes that the Philippians' gift is a way for them to express their concern for him in their absence. Hawthorne and Martin mark this as one of the key words of the whole letter, the Philippians' concern for him. Paul has referred some 7 times to how the Philippians ought to orient their thoughts and their mind toward unity, toward humility, toward what is good and beautiful and true. This concern that he is talking about is not just a mental exercise, but it is thought that leads to action. Paul says that the Philippians' thoughtful care for him has blossomed once again through their generosity on his behalf. You can think of your perennials blooming again this spring. It has blossomed and it will go on to bear fruit, not just in Paul's life, but in their own. To return to the economic language of verse 17, according to Hawthorne and Martin, Paul views the Philippians' gift to him as a spiritual investment that will increasingly pay them rich dividends. Finally, Paul turns to the language of worship. The Philippians' gifts are, according to verse 18, a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. This is how the Old Testament describes sacrifices offered in the temple in worship. As Fred Craddock observes, Paul has now taken this whole transaction and moved it to the altar. The Philippians' gift, he says, was an act of worship. Paul may have been the immediate recipient of the gift, but he says the ultimate recipient of what they've done is God. That's why the offering is an act of worship, whether we're passing a collection plate on Sunday morning or you're mailing in your check or even giving online. It's even whether we're giving to church or another ministry, to a food bank, to a neighbor in need. These are acts of worship that are acceptable and pleasing to God. Paul says, "It was good of you to give." And Paul concludes, "And my God will meet all of your needs according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus." This is the receiving half of giving and receiving. God provides. And Paul would add, especially to those who give. Paul is consistent in connecting generosity with God's provision. To the Corinthians, he writes, "Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously will also reap generously." God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. Paul's theology of blessing is that God's abundance is meant to bless others. There's also a time simply to receive. You might notice how often the word need recurs in these passages. Paul can speak both of his own needs and the needs of the Philippians here in chapter 4. To the Corinthians, he writes of meeting the needs of the Lord's people in Judea, while also reassuring the anxious Corinthians that they will have all that they need, even if they give generously. All of us have certain basic human needs: food and clothing and shelter, safety and security. As Paul explains in 2 Corinthians 8, sometimes you meet the needs of your brothers and sisters, and sometimes they meet yours. Giving and receiving is a two-way street, as it has been in the relationship between Paul and the Philippians. He writes to the Corinthians, "Our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn their plenty will supply what you need." The goal is equality. I suspect that even having written those words, Paul may have had a hard time being on the receiving end of the Philippians' gift, especially knowing the relative poverty out of which they gave. But for Paul, who had given so much over the course of his lifetime, this was a time to receive. And especially during this season that we find ourselves in, when the financial and the emotional and the psychological pressures have been so great on so many of us. It may be true for us as well. A time to receive as well as to give. If that's where you are at today, I want to encourage you to reach out, whether to your church family or to someone else you trust, and like Paul, just receive. This is a time for generosity. This is a time for learning to be content in the circumstances we find ourselves in. This is a time for sharing and supporting one another, for giving and receiving. May we find the same surprising peace and joy and contentment in this season that Paul found within the confines of his prison cell. I can do all this through Him who gives me strength. Amen.